The Haftarah for this week's Parsha, Parshas Bahar, is the Nevuah in Yirmiyah Perek Lamed Beis, which is a remarkable series of psukim. Begins in Perek Lamed Beis, Pasuk Vav, and it extends and ends with Perek Lamed Beis, Pasuk Chaf Zayin. And to fully appreciate the context of this Nevuah, we need to begin with some background, which you have here on the top of the handout. And the background, which can be called from a quick perusal of Melachim Beis, Perek Chav Gimel, Perek Chav Dalid, is the following. We know that from our Tisha B'Av Kinos, Yoshio HaMelech was one of the tzaddikim of the Malchei Yehuda, who was Machzor Klal Yisrael B'tshuva, and he was killed in battle by Paro Necho of Mitzrayim. He is then, the Pesukim tell us, Melachim Beis, succeeded by his son Yehoahaz, who unfortunately was not the tzaddik that his father was. And the Navi there, Melachim Beis once again, Perek Chav Gimel, describes how Yehoahaz, after merely 3 months of serving as king of Yehuda, Yehoahaz is then deposed by the same Paro Necho of Mitzrayim, and he is succeeded by his brother, Yoshio's other son, Yehoyakim. And Yehoyakim as well did not last that long as an independent monarch, because during his reign, Nebuchadnezzar, Melech Bavel, invades Eretz Yisrael and dominates Yehoyakim for 3 years or so. Yehoyakim rebels against Nebuchadnezzar and tries to align himself with Mitzrayim. And what emerges from the Psukim is that at this time in Jewish history, the two world powers were Bavel and Mitzrayim. They were the two world powers who were vying for influence, vying for control over Eretz Yisrael. And Yehoyakim attempted to overthrow, shall we say, the yoke of, not overthrow, but to relieve himself of the yoke of Melech Bavel and instead align himself with Mitzrayim. But he is unsuccessful because ultimately Nebuchadnezzar returns and removes Yehoyakim from power and instead puts in his place Yehoyakim's son, who was Yehoyachin. So this was the series of kings who, as Bais Rishon sadly winds down, were the kings who followed Yoshio, who was the tzaddik, who was Machzor Klal Yisrael B'tshuva, his son Yehoahaz, who unfortunately was not a tzaddik, lasted 3 months, and was removed in favor of his brother Yehoyakim. Yehoyakim, trying to avert or avoid the influence of Nebuchadnezzar, ultimately is deposed by Nebuchadnezzar and replaced with his own son, Yehoyachin. And as you see in the next series of bullet points there, Melachim Beis, Perek Chav Dalet, we read that after just 3 months, Yehoyachin himself is exiled by Nebuchadnezzar, along with what is referred to in the Pasuk as the Charash U'Masger, which Rashi tells us means the Chachamim, they're leading Torah luminaries of Klal Yisrael. And the Pesukim describe also 10,000 Sarim officers and warriors, soldiers who were exiled along with Yehoyachin. This is the exile, the Golos of Yechanya, as it sometimes is referred to as, Golos Yechanya, Charash U'Masger. And finally, the last king to serve during the Bais Rishon period, who replaces Yehoyachin, is Yehoyachin's uncle, the Pasuk says, whose name was initially Matanya, but Nebuchadnezzar, who installed him, called him Tzidkiyahu. This is in Melachim Beis, Perek Chav Dalet, and towards Pasuk Yud Zayin, Beis Chav Dalet Yud Zayin. That's where we find that the Pasuk says that Melch Bavel put Matanya on the throne. Matanya was then renamed by Nebuchadnezzar and was referred to as Tzidkiyahu. Because this is the series of kings that are ruling over Yehuda as Bais Rishon winds down. And the last king before the Churban Bais Rishon is Tzidkiyahu. The last king is Tzidkiyahu. And Tzidkiyahu, we are then told as follows. If you look now, Yirmiyahu Perek Lamites. Now we're going to be looking at a few Pesukim in Yirmiyahu first before we get to actual Haftarah, because the Pesukim in Yirmiyahu, the Prakim in Yirmiyahu are much out of order. Chronologically, it's a disarray. So to appreciate where our Haftarah begins, we have to jump around a little bit. Our Haftarah is Perek Lamed Beis, but if we look at some of the other Prakim, before and after Perek Lamed Beis, the Haftarah, we'll get a better picture of what our Haftarah is all about. So now that we've seen the line of succession with these last kings of Yehuda, Yoshio, Yehoahaz, Yehoyakim, Yehoyachin, and finally Tzidkiyahu, now look at Yirmiyahu Perek Lamites, Pasuk Aleph. And the Navi here tells us, Bashana HaTishias, in the ninth year, Letzidkiyahu Melch Yehuda, of Yitzidkiyahu's reign, Bachodesh HaAsir, in the tenth month, which is the month of Teves, Ba Nebuchadrezzar Melech Bavel. If you notice in Nevi'im, sometimes Nebuchadnezzar is referred to as Nebuchadnezzar, sometimes it's referred to as Nebuchadrezzar. There is a fascinating Talmud Chacham in Eretz Yisrael named Rabbi Yehuda Landi, who, aside from being a tremendous Talmud Chacham, is also an expert in biblical archaeology. But he is, unlike most archaeologists, a tremendous Talmud Chacham and a very, very, very frum individual. And in a sefer that he published on Yirmiyahu, in which he gives you the historical and the context of the history of Yirmiyahu and the themes of the prakim of Yirmiyahu, he notes that the name Nebuchadrezzar, Nebuchadnezzar, shifts back and forth in the Navi. And he says, if you look at the Akkadian name for Nebuchadnezzar, it actually resembles more Nebuchadrezzar. So Nebuchadrezzar, he thinks, is the more accurate, historically speaking, from the Akkadian perspective. He doesn't know why the Navi sometimes refers to him as Nebuchadnezzar. And we know him more commonly as Nebuchadnezzar, but in this pasuk here is referred to as Nebuchadrezzar. And he actually gives you the Akkadian name, what it actually is. But suffice it to say that he doesn't... I'm sorry?
Which pasuk? You skip to a different pasuk.
Looking on the handout, in Yirmiyahu Perek Lamites, pasuk Aleph now. Yirmiyahu Perek Lamites, pasuk Aleph. So the Navi tells us in Yirmiyahu Perek Lamites that Nebuchadrezzar comes in the ninth year of Tzidkiyahu's reign. He and all of his army to Yerushalayim, vayatsuru aleha, they place it under siege, meaning that this is Asar B'Teves, that's what we're talking about here. When Yerushalayim is put under siege by Nebuchadnezzar, that's what we're describing here in this pasuk. The 10th month of Teves, that's when the siege of Yerushalayim begins. And in Pasuk Beis, Perek Lamites, we read that in the 11th year of Tzidkiyahu, so the siege began Asar B'Teves of the 9th year of Tzidkiyahu. Now in the 11th year of Tzidkiyahu, in the 4th month, the 9th of the month, Havka Ahair, the walls of the city were broken through. This refers to the month of Tammuz. We fast Shavasar B'Tammuz to commemorate the breaching of the walls of Yerushalayim in both Bayis Rishon and Bayis Sheni. The pasuk you'll notice here speaks of the 9th of Tammuz as the date on which the first Beis HaMikdash, the walls of the city, were breached. We, of course, fast on the 17th of Tammuz, and the Gemara discusses the difference in the first Bayis and second Bayis in terms of the actual date that the walls were breached. But nonetheless, in Yirmiyahu Perek Lamites, Pasuk Aleph, Pasuk Beis, we see that this is the end of Bayis Rishon. The ninth year of Tzidkiyahu is when Melech Bavel lays siege to Yerushalayim. And now bear in mind, siege, we don't know what that means in our, thankfully, in our contemporary life. We don't know what siege means. Siege means that you cannot leave the city, nothing comes into the city, and sadly, the city starves. It's a slow, 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 terrible, terrible process. So the ninth year of Tzidkiyahu, the siege begins. The 11th year of Tzidkiyahu is when the walls are broken into. Now, what happened during this period of time that Tzidkiyahu was king? So jump down now to Yirmiyahu Perek Lamed Zayin, and we'll get a bit more of a perspective as to what Yirmiyahu's life is like during this period of time that Tzidkiyahu was king. So Yirmiyahu Perek Lamed Zayin now. As I said, the Prakim and Yirmiyahu are out of order, chronologically speaking. Our Haftarah is Perek Lamed Beis. We just introduced Perek Lamed Tes. Now we're jumping back to Perek Lamed Zayin. So Yirmiyahu Perek Lamed Zayin, Pasuk Hei, the Navi says, V'chel Paro yatsam Mitzrayim. Paro's army leaves Mitzrayim, heads towards Yerushalayim. Vayishmu hakasdim hatsarim al Yerushalayim es shimam. The Babylonians, the Kasdim, who are laying siege to Yerushalayim, they hear about this. Vayeolim al Yerushalayim. They pull back. They're hesitant to confront the Egyptians head on, so they pull back. Again, as I said before, the two powers now that are vying for influence over Eretz Yisrael are the Egyptians and the Babylonians. Babylonians from the north, Egyptians from the south, and they're trying to each seize influence from the other over Eretz Yisrael, over Yerushalayim. So the Babylonians pull back from their siege of Yerushalayim because they hear the Egyptians are coming. And this, if you're a Jew living in Yerushalayim now and you hear that the Mitzrayim are coming, Babylonians are pulling back, you'll breathe a sigh of relief. You know, you had been terrified of the siege, the Nebuchadnezzar is trying to break into Yerushalayim. Now you hear the good word, Mitzrayim is coming to your rescue, coming to your defense, Babylonians pull back, you'll relax, you'll sit back, Baruch Hashem, danger averted. And yet, Yirmiyahu now comes with a pessimistic prediction and prophecy. In Perek Lamed Zayin, Pasuk Vav, Vayhi Dvar Hashem El Yirmiyahu Hanavi Lamor. God speaks to Yirmiyahu, and he says as follows, Pasuk Zayin, Kamar Hashem El Kei Yisrael, Kosomra Melch Yehuda. Report this to the king of Yehuda. Hashaleach Eschem Eli L'Darsheni. The king of Yehuda, the Navi had said in the previous Pesukim, had requested of Yirmiyahu to daven on his behalf to Kadosh Baruch Hu. I didn't cite this pasuk on the sheet here, but in Perek Lamed Zayin, in the preceding Pesukim, Yirmiyahu was requested by the king to daven on their behalf, to daven on their behalf. And the Navi is now being told to respond to that request. So the king, the Pasuk said in the beginning of Perek Lamed Zayin, was Tzidkiyahu. Tzidkiyahu reaches out to Yirmiyahu and asks him to Hispalona ba'adenu el Hashem elokeinu, please daven to God on our behalf, because he's worried about the siege of the Babylonians. And now God tells Yirmiyahu, respond to that request and say as follows. In Pasuk Zayin, Hinechel paro hayotze lochem la'azra. Those Egyptians who are coming out to help you, shav la'artzo Mitzrayim. They're going to turn back to Egypt. Don't rely on them. And what's going to happen then? Pasuk Ches, v'shavu hakastim. The Babylonians will come back. V'nilchamu ala irazos. They will wage war against Yerushalayim. U'lachadua, they'll conquer Yerushalayim. U'shrafu ba'esh. And they're going to burn it in flames. So that's not a very good report to get from the Navi. Here you are, you know, you see a ray of hope. The Babylonians have pulled back. Your once upon a time ally, Mitzrayim, is coming to your rescue. And you're breathing a sigh of relief. And you see a moment of opportunity. You tell the Navi, please daven for us. And the Navi says, sorry, nothing happening. Egyptians are turning around. Babylonians are coming back. They're going to destroy the city, burn it in flames. That's not very, very positive. And in fact, that is obviously exactly what happened. And the Pesukim then describe further in Perek Lamed Zayin, after this report from the Navi Yirmiyah, negative report, no one's happy to hear it. The Pesukim describe how Yirmiyah was then accused. He was caught trying to leave Yerushalayim during this lull in the siege. He's caught trying to leave Yerushalayim. He's accused of trying to escape to the Babylonians, and I guess to defect, if you will. And he responds here, and here this is on the sheet now, Perek Lamed Zayin, Pasuk Yedalad. Yirmiyahu says, Sheker, this is all false. Eineni nofel al hakasdim, I'm not defecting to the Babylonians. V'lo shama elav, they didn't listen to him. Vayispos Yiriyah, this individual who seized him and accused him falsely of defecting to the enemy, grabs him, brings him to the officers, and Pasuk Tezvav, Vayiktsufu Asarm al Yirmiyahu, they're furious at him. They believe these allegations that he's defecting to the Babylonians. Vehiku was so, they beat him. If you can imagine, the Navi Hashem is being beaten by the officers in charge of Yerushalayim because they believe the allegations he's defecting to the Babylonians. And what do? They throw him into Beis Ha'esur. They throw him into prison. Beis Yehonasan HaSofer, in the home of Yehonasan HaSofer, Ki Oso Asu LeBeis HaKela. That home was transformed into a prison, a jail cell. Yirmiyahu was thrown into that jail cell. So now let's back up for a moment, just take this all into consideration. So we saw the beginning of the process of the decline of Malchus Yehuda, right? After Yoshio's death at the hands of Paro, Yehoahaz rules for 3 months. He's deposed. Yehoiakim then takes over. Nebuchadnezzar dominates him. Yehoiakim rebels. He is deposed. His son Yehoiachin comes in. After 3 months, he's exiled with 10,000 soldiers and the Chachamim, the Gal Sichanya, the Charash, and the Masker. He's now replaced by the last king, Tzidkiyahu. And Tzidkiyahu now, in the ninth year of his reign, Yerushalayim is under siege. There's a moment of relief when the Babylonians pull back because the Egyptians seem to be coming towards them. And they have some hope, a ray of hope. They appeal to Yirmiyahu, please daven for us. He comes back with a very, very harsh prediction. The city's going to go up in flames. He tries to escape the city. They seize him, they arrest him, they beat him, they throw him into jail. He's now sitting in jail. And just one more series of psukim to see. Perek Lamed Zayin, Pasuk Chaf Aleph. Yirmiyahu is in jail. The psukim describe how Yirmiyahu then appeals to Tzidkiyahu. What did I do to you? Why am I sitting here in jail? And the king, I guess, has some sort of compassion on him. Not totally, because in Pasuk Chaf Aleph, we see here, Vaitzava Hamelch Tzidkiyahu. He orders Vayafkidu Es Yirmiyahu B'chatzar HaMatara. They put him into a different prison, if you will. Chatzar HaMatara is a different jail cell. He was transferred from where he was before to this particular jail cell. He's given a loaf of bread each day, says the Pasuk. And Yirmiyahu is now stuck in that Chatzar HaMatara, in that jail cell. He's stuck in that jail cell. Okay, so now we're approaching our Haftarah now. We're working our way back from Perek Lamed Tes, Perek Lamed Zayin, and now Perek Lamed Beis, which is our Haftarah. But before our Haftarah begins, Perek Lamed Beis tells us the following. Yirmiyahu is now in this Chatzar HaMatara. He's in jail. And he receives a nevuah from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Pasuk Aleph here, Perek Lamed Beis. When did this prophecy come to Yirmiyahu? In the 10th year of Tzidkiyahu's reign, which is the 18th year of Nebuchadnezzar's reign. So bear in mind, the siege, Asar B'Teves, started in the 9th year of Tzidkiyahu's reign. The ultimate breaching of the walls in Tammuz is in the 11th year of Tzidkiyahu's reign. This nevuah we're reading in our Haftarah this coming Shabbos occurred in the 10th year of Tzidkiyahu's reign. So it's right in the middle of Asar B'Teves and Tes Tammuz. The city is under siege. Yirmiyahu has been beaten, accused of trying to defect to the Babylonians. He's sitting in jail. He knows, he only was told by Kadosh Baruch Hu that the Babylonians are going to come back. They're going to destroy the city, set it all on fire. And in Pasuk Beis here, Perek Lamed Beis, we are told that the king of Bavel has already returned with his army to lay siege to Yerushalayim. And in Pasuk Gimel, Perek Lamed Beis, we are reminded that Tzidkiyahu had jailed him, angrily saying to him, why are you prophesizing that God has said that I will give this city over to the hands of Bavel and they will conquer it? So that's now the prelude to our Haftarah. This is all the beginning of Perek Lamed Beis. And our Haftarah now begins in Perek Lamed Beis, Pasuk Vav. That's where our Haftarah now kicks in. Okay, so this all was just setting the stage for our Haftarah, because now we see precisely what's going on. Now, it's important to keep this in mind, because what we just painted now is a picture of desperation, of misery, of Jews looking at a future that is pretty much non-existent. It's bleak. It's doomsday. Their king Yehoiachin has already been exiled to Bavel. Their Chacham have been exiled with him. 10,000 of their commanding officers and soldiers have gone with him as well. The remaining Navi Yirmiyahu is giving the most bleakest of predictions that the city is going to go up in flames. Bavel is still laying siege. He has been so since Asar B'Teves of the 9th year. It's now in the middle of the 10th year. Yirmiyahu is in jail. And now begins our Haftarah with a very puzzling, puzzling nevuah. Okay, this all sets the stage for the following perplexing nevuah. The Haftarah begins with the following. Just briefly peruse it to just get a gist of what's going on here. By Yomer Yirmiyahu, Yirmiyahu says, Hayad Dvar Hashem Elai Lamor. God spoke to me just now in jail, saying as follows. Hine Hanamel ben Shalom dotcha. Hanamel, son of Shalom, who is your uncle. Unclear if the uncle is Hanamel and the Shalom is the grandfather of Yirmiyahu, or whether Shalom is the uncle and Hanamel is the first cousin. Either way, it's a close relative. Boy Lechalemor, he's going to come to you, God tells Yirmiyahu, saying as follows, Kenelecha Asadi, purchase my field, Asher Ba'anosos, that is in the town, the city of Anosos, Kidlecha Mishpat Hagu'ula Liknos, because after all, you are the closest relative who would be the one to redeem my field had I sold it. Now this is, of course, a connection to Parshas Bahar. We read of exactly this halacha, that if someone is forced to sell his field because of financial distress, the Torah doesn't want one's Yerusha, one's Nachla, to be given to some other Shevet. So the Torah gives instructions that it's a mitzvah on the closest relatives to buy back that field that was sold to keep it in the family. So here, Hanamel is going to tell Yirmiyahu, purchase my field that is in Anasos, because you are the one who has that closest relationship to purchase it back. And then, in fact, Yirmiyahu then describes, Vayyabo alai Hanamel, ben dodi, kedvar Hashem, Hanamel, my cousin, comes to me, as God said, El Chatzar Matar, comes to this jail where I'm being held, and very much like God predicted, so to speak, just as God told him, Vayyomer alai kenena esodi asher ba'anasos, he tells me, buy my field in Anasos, asher be'eretz Binyamin, in the land of Binyamin, kilchom mishpat ha'Yerusha, you're a close heir, and you're the one who would be the one to redeem it on my behalf. Kenelach, buy it. And Yirmiyahu says, once this happened, this was exactly what God had said. That's exactly what happened. This is clearly a Dvar Hashem that I should purchase Hanamel's field. Now, if you think about it, purchasing a field in Eretz Yisrael at this moment, we talk about wise real estate investments. Now, is this the best way to invest your money when you yourself have just predicted that the city of Jerusalem is going to go up in flames? You've seen the previous king exiled to Babel with 10,000 of the best soldiers and commanders of Eretz Yisrael. Babel's laying siege to Jerusalem. You don't know if you're going to survive. And if you do survive, are you going to be sent into exile into Babel? So what do? You put all your money into real estate in Anasos. It's not the wisest move, one would suspect. It's as if, as a mushal. This I think I heard from Rabbi Alan Schwartz giving a show on this parak using this mashal. Imagine the Jews of Gush Katif after the government decided to evacuate them all and give it all back to the Palestinians. So can you imagine a guy from Tel Aviv, you know, a fund manager tells his clients, we're going to invest and purchase land in Gush Katif. The prices are really cheap now, really, really cheap. It doesn't make any sense. No one's going to do that. And yet exactly this is what's happening. The land is about to be taken by the Babylonians. Yirmiyahu himself has predicted that, Kadosh Baruch has told him so, now he's being told, purchase some real estate in Anasos. And yet, God said, as Yirmiyahu said, this is Dvar Hashem. It was exactly as God had told me. It's the Dvar Hashem, I got to do it. So what does he do? Bo'eknes asade, I purchased the field, says Yirmiyahu. Me'is Hanamel ben Dodi, Yashab Anasos, from Hanamel, the field in Anasos. Vo'eshkalolo as hakesef, shiva shkalim vasar hakasef. And I paid good money for this. I paid good money for this field. This wasn't just a basement bargain. This was expensive. This was expensive. See, he's investing significant funds in the purchase of this field, knowing full well that Chorban is about to occur. Chorban is looming large. And Yirmiyahu writes, Ve'echtof ba'sefer, and I wrote this transaction down in the document, the bill of sale. Ve'echtom, and I perhaps sealed it or signed it. Ba'aid edim, and I had witnesses to witness the transaction. Va'eshkol akesef imaznayim, and I weighed the silver to make sure I was giving him exactly what he wanted for it. And then pasuk aleph, pasuk beis, what does he do? He takes the sefer hamikna, he takes that bill of sale, that proof of transaction that is sealed and signed. He gives it to Baruch ben Neria ben Machseya, in the front of Hanamel, the seller, in front of the witnesses, in front of all the Jews who are there in the Chatzar Matara, in the jail where he is. And he then orders Baruch ben Neria as follows. And he says in Pasuk Yudalid, so says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, take these documents, these proofs of sale, that which is sealed, hachasum, that which is galoy. Mefarshim say that there might have been two proofs of sale, one that was kept sealed, one that was kept for referral purposes. Unesatam b'chli charis, put them in kli charis, in a sealed pottery clay vessel. Why? Leman yam du yamim rabim. They should last a long time. Now, kli charis, as Yehudalanti points out, leman yam du yamim rabim, when a document was sealed in a kli charis in those days, it could last thousands of years. V'harai, he says, Dead Sea Scrolls. It's exactly what they were. Dead Sea Scrolls were parchment from 2,000 years ago, found in a cave in Qumran, sealed in a kli charis. Exactly. The kli charis keeps up the humidity. It's in dry, arid conditions anyways. And l'man yam yam rabim, literally. Yirmiyo is saying to Baruch ben Arya, I want this proof of sale to last a long time. Seal it. That's why archaeologists tell you when you dig in these archaeological digs, the most likely item to come across is pottery that lasts longer than anything else. So Yirmiyo is now insisting on keeping this proof of sale for Yamim Rabim for many, many, many days. For many days. So why is that? Why is that? And then in Pasuk Tesvav, Yirmiyo explains, because God has said, Od yikanu batim v'sados ukramim ba'aretz hazos. Once again, there will become a time when Jews will purchase houses, fields, and vineyards in this land. So now put yourself back at that picture of time. You're living under siege. Food is being depleted. Perhaps starvation is already a fact of life. The Babylonian army is poised to destroy Yerushalayim. The Navi himself has declared that the city will be incinerated in flames. And Yirmiyahu is saying, I'm going to invest my life savings in real estate in Anasos, because God has said that we will yet again purchase property in this land, and I want this bill of sale, proof of sale, to last for a very long time. One hand, you might think it's absurd. On the other hand, that's precisely what Yirmiyahu is doing. At this worst moment of despair, he is strengthening and reinvigorating their faith in Geula. So they shouldn't despair. So a beautiful example given in Sefer Mishmasos Zav. He cites from the Hesped that Rav Bezalel Zoltis Zatzal gave for Rav Yosef Shlomo Kahaneman, Panavizhar Rav. And he recalled an event that occurred in the 1940s. So as is well known, early 1940s, the Nazi German general Erwin Rommel was swooping across North Africa with his Afrika Korps. He was virtually unstoppable. And he was making his way deliberately straight toward Egypt with the ultimate goal of reaching Palestine. The Einsatzgruppen SS were waiting to sweep in behind him to Lo Aleinu, due to Eretz Yisrael, what they did to the Jews of Europe. Apparently, there was a period of about 7 months or so that has since been referred to in Israeli press and literature as Matayim Yimei Charada, 200 days of terror. The Jews in Palestine living in absolute terror. 1941, seeing this Nazi general virtually unstoppable, sweeping across North Africa, obviously headed straight towards Eretz Yisrael, and there was no one to stop him. No one to stop him. And the Jews in Eretz Yisrael had nowhere to go. Literally months and months of terror. And it was only 1942 when British General Bernard Montgomery, at the Battle of El Alamein, succeeded in halting his advance, that the Jews then breathed a sigh of relief. But before that battle in 1942, the Jews in Eretz Yisrael were living with intensifying terror and dread each and every day. And so Zolti Zatzal recalled in a hesped for the Panavizhar Rav, the Panavizhar Rav said to him in 1940, I am purchasing a huge plot of land in Bnei Brak to build a yeshiva. The Panavizhar yeshiva, obviously. And Zolti said to him, now, we have to run for our lives. Rommel is approaching. Why are you building yeshiva now? And Panavizhar Rav said precisely this. He said, why is this nevuah, this haftorah, written in Sefer Yirmiyah? We know Chazal tell us that the only nevuos that are written in Tanakh are nevuos that are nitzuch haladoros, nevuos that are necessary for all generations. So why do I need to know this little bit of seemingly irrelevant history that Yirmiyahu invested in some property in Anasos and put a shtar mechira in a klicheres l'man yam v'yamim rabim. Why is that important for me to know? He says, this is why. Because even when it looks bleak, even when you don't see the light at the end of the tunnel yet, but in the words of the pasuk we just read, Od yikanu batim v'sados ukramim v'aretz hazos. There is going to be geula for Eretz Yisrael, and land will once again be purchased. And he therefore, on that basis, was inspired and had that bitachon that all would turn out well for the Jews of Eretz Yisrael during World War II, and was therefore in the middle of the war, 1940-41, purchasing land in Bnei Brak to build his yeshiva, the Panovich Yeshiva, which is, again, a beautiful, beautiful musar, and clearly a direct lesson from this nevuah here in Yirmiyahu. And Yirmiyahu then, just to finish off the last series of psukim here in the Haftorah, it's a bunch of psukim still, but just to briefly touch upon the themes that we find now in, through Pasuk Chav Zayin, Yirmiyahu himself says, I dive into Kadosh Baruch Hu. After giving the money and giving the Shtar Mechir to Baruch Ben Arya, I said to Kadosh Baruch Hu, God, Aha, Hashem Elokim, what's going on here? I just don't understand. You, Kadosh Baruch Hu, created heaven and earth. You took us out. He said, you with your Zruach HaNetuya, nothing is hidden from you. And in Pasuk Yitches, he says, you're Osa Chesed La'alafim, you're Meshalim Avon Avos Achek B'neim, you are Hakel, Hagadol, Hagibur, Hashem Tzvaka Shemo. You are all powerful. You are kind. Now the Gemara in Brachas Lamed Gimel notes that in this phrase in Pasuk Yitches, Hakel, Hagadol, Hagibur, one word is missing that you would have expected to find there. What word is that? Nora, right? That's always the phrase we find. Hakel, Hagadol, Hagibur, Nora. And yet Yirmiyahu, the Gemara says, left out the word Nora. Because at this time, he wasn't seeing the Nora. Meaning, of course he knew Kadosh Baruch Hu's Nora, but Nora means that God is awe-inspiring. People sitter. People are in awe of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. At this point in time, things were so bleak, so desperate. There was such despair, people didn't see the Midah of Nora. And so Yirmiyahu, who is davening with the passion that he's able to muster based on what he was experiencing, he didn't see the Nora. He left out the Nora for that reason. He just didn't see it. He knew it, but he didn't see it. He wasn't experiencing it. That's how desperate the situation was. And Rashi here in the Haftorah notices this. He says, quotes the Gemara, that Yirmiyahu omits the word Nora because the Ovdei Avodah Zarah are merakten beheichalo. The Goyim, Ovdei Avodah Zarah, are dancing in God's Mikdash. Well, they assume were to be. So we're not seeing the Nora of HaKadosh Baruch Hu here. And he then, in brief, very quickly, he says, you HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you performed wonders in Mitzrayim. You brought us out of Mitzrayim. You gave us this land. We came, we inherited, the Jews didn't listen to you, didn't follow your Torah, and now you've brought upon them this terrible evil, this terrible wrath. And now the solos, those catapults or the ramparts are being brought to the city to conquer it. The city is being given over to the Babylonians, the Kastim, who are fighting for it. And there is cherev, there is rav, there's dever, there's sword, there's famine, there's pestilence. And you, Kadosh Baruch Hu, you see this. What you said came true. You see this. And now you're telling me, says Yirmiyahu, Pasuk Chafei, buy a field for yourself and sign on witnesses. And the city is being taken by the Kastim. So in Pasuk Chafei, he asks that which is so obvious. He said, I can't make sense of this. Look what's happening here. There is death by sword, by famine, by pestilence. We didn't listen to your Torah. We didn't follow your rules. Now you're punishing us. Babylon is taking over the city. The land is being given over to them, and now you're telling me, buy a field. So, I don't get it. I don't get it. And the Haftarah concludes with Kadosh Baruch Hu responding by saying, I am a Kadosh Baruch Hu, Elokei Kol Basar, Hamimeni Yipale Kol Davar. You think I don't know what's going to happen? I know everything. And on that note, the Haftarah ends. As if to say, says Rav Gamliel, yes, sometimes things look bleak. They look desperate. We can't make head or tails of it. We don't understand it. And yet, the message of, the Musar message of the Navi is, Kadosh Baruch Hu says, we do. Kadosh Baruch Hu says, we do. And even when things are desperate, there is bitachon, there is emunah, there is a light that will appear at the end of the tunnel, even though we don't see it yet. And that was the message that Rav Kahaneman took from this Haftarah. And that is, of course, the reason why it's written in the Navi. And it's perhaps, Gamliel Rabinovitz suggests, connects to this week's Parsha, because aside from the fact that we mentioned the relative being the one to purchase the field of his close relative, but aside from that, this Haftarah, this week's Parsha, speaks of Shemitah. It was as a sin for not observing Shemitah that the Jews were sent into exile. And so we're describing here the Churban bias that resulted from that failure to keep Shemitah, the Gaulus that was predicted that ultimately came about as a result of it, but at the same time, the Geula, that one had to have Bitachon and Emunah, would ultimately come as well. Shkoch to all, and have a wonderful evening. Next week, we will move the shir to before Mincha, Ba'es Shem at 7:15.